We can't mention Todd Goldstein in those dispatches anymore because he's turned his back on a big Geelong offer. It was a four-year deal in the end from the Cats Whisp to get him down the highway. 4 years. He's turned his back on that. He's accepted a three-year deal. It might be two with a trigger, but a generous one. It's essentially a three-year offer. So he will stay a one-club player at Arden Street, which is absolutely huge for that club.
That's how Sam Edmund broke the story on Breakfast this morning, and the man himself, Todd Goldstein. Todd, welcome to SEN and congratulations.
Thanks a lot. Thanks for having me on.
How did you ultimately decide to stay at North Melbourne and be that one club player?
Oh, look, there was a fair bit that went into the thought process, and it was definitely a decision I didn't take lightly, but in the end, it came down to a few things. One that was the love that I have for the footy club, the staff and the players. And the other thing was I've worked so hard to get myself into a really good position mentally. And you know, I really wanted to try and limit the amount of change that I had in my life and really just keep enjoying what I'm doing. And that was ultimately the final decision for me.
How aggressive was the interest from elsewhere and particularly from Geelong, Todd?
Yeah, there was a lot of interest, and I'm very appreciative of that interest. And it definitely didn't make the decision easy. But you know, once we were able to get to the footy club to a point where I had that little bit more security, you know, as a 31-year-old, it isn't the easiest thing to get job security. Yeah. And that was the ultimate goal for me, was just getting that security. And once the club came on board with that, it became a lot easier decision for me.
Did you have a few days or a week there at any stage, Todd, where you thought, I probably will go here?
Oh, it was probably changing by the hour with the way all the negotiations were going and where we're headed. You know, it was definitely something that I'd never considered before, and over the last probably two or three weeks since we finished playing, it's definitely been a long, drawn-out thought process for me. But, yeah, ultimately, I couldn't see myself being somewhere else, and I couldn't see myself leaving the footy club.
Is it? It's really here, Goldie. Well done, mate. Is it as simple as the offer might have been a little bit more money to go elsewhere, but not a life changing difference in the contractual terms, but the decision to leave North would be a life changing decision?
Yeah, I think so, and I think it is obviously always hard to leave the club you're in, and you yourself know that really, but I think it's one of those things where, yeah, the offer was obviously, the offer, we had some probably better financial and maybe even longer years offers at other clubs, but I really felt like the club still took a risk in giving me the 3 years, and I know that was a big leap for the footy club, and I wanted to show the respect to them that, you know, that they're taking that risk on me, and you know, hopefully I can repay them for that, because as we all know, when you're 31, if you can get 1 year deal, you're usually pretty happy. And that was something I was pretty bullish on, is that I really wanted that security for my family, and the club came on board.
I think a lot of people look at Geelong and they look at you as a bit of the missing piece for their football club. And if they were able to get someone like you, well, then all of a sudden they maintain premiership relevance for next year. Is how much of that and the lure of playing in a premiership became a part of your decision? And has it just been now? Is it just now too difficult for players to be able to forecast that success when you look at the sort of favoured premiership teams that have got up over the last few years?
Yeah, I think that's definitely the case. I think, you know, there was probably a few years ago where you could probably pick two or three teams that had a genuine chance to win a premiership, and everyone else was probably going to find it hard. But these days, the competition's so close that you've seen the teams like a Richmond or a Bulldogs that come from low down the ladder the year before and come bob up and win a premiership. So, you know, the AFL's done a really good job in making the quality there and making every team feel like they're a chance going into the new year. So, you know, I think as much as, you know, you'd like to think that you're the missing piece at any team that making a premiership, there's so many other factors that come into it now that, you know, I'm hopeful that we can now build a list at North that can contend and play final footy, and you never know what happens when you make finals.
How did you think through, Todd, your own durability? So you've spoken to us about the security and the club taking the chance on 3 years. How do you sort of measure in your own mind, how am I going to be at 34? I know how I am at 31.
I think I've sort of looked in on that. I don't want this to be my last contract. So, you know, from a mental and physical point where I'm saying now, I still think I've got 4 or 5 years in me. And I know that from my perspective, I'm doing absolutely everything in my power to make sure that my body stays good and that my form stays good. And that's all I can do. You never know what you're going to get going into a new season. All you can do is prepare the best you can. And I know I'm at a point now where I'm really enjoying my off-season training. I'm really enjoying my preparation for the next year. And while that's still going, I know I'm going to give myself every opportunity to perform and to stay healthy. And, you know, the last 2 years, it's really held me in good stead, and hopefully that continues.
How much did a new coach and Brady Rawlings, a new appointment coming into the club, how much did that influence your decision?
Look, I think the conversations I've had with Shorey over the last couple of months has definitely filled me with confidence in the direction that we're headed and you know how much he wants this footy club to be successful. So that's definitely aligned with what I was looking for. And obviously with Brady starting in a couple of months, I think he'll probably have a different spin on things. But you know, I know Brady as a teammate for 4 or 5 years, and I know what sort of person that Brady is, and I just think he's going to be a massive acquisition to this footy club, and he's really going to drive change, and he's going to drive us to be better, and that's all you can ask for as a player.
Did you rely on some close people around you? Like, who were the people you spoke to before you made this decision, or was it purely just a you and your family move?
Yeah, I mean, like obviously I had conversations with different teammates and friends and things like that along the journey. But in the end, it came down to me and my manager having a few conversations and also my family, my partner and my mum were probably the two biggest support networks that I chose to talk to and work out, you know, what I could do and what was going to be best for me. And, you know, I think we all felt like this was the best option once I got that job security.
What was mum's advice?
Oh, I think mum just wanted me to be happy, but I think she understands the work that I've done to get myself into a position where I'm mentally enjoying my footy and enjoying life, and I think she was very encouraging of me to continue on at North if I got the deal that gave me that security.
Well done. Well done. I'm sure these things are never easy, so the anxieties in all of its congratulations on the decision that you've made.
Thank you very much.
Todd Goldstein, who signs for 3 more years at North Melbourne and doesn't want to be done there either. We'll tidy up with Roo after the break. Todd Goldstein recommits to North Melbourne. What does that do to the overall trade picture? We'll ring the trade bell at 10:40 with Sam McClure. The finale of the Ashes, and it's been an absorbing series. What lies in store at the Oval on our way to Pete Lawler in London? Here are the two captains, Joe Root and Tim Payne.
We've not lost anything yet. Of course, we're disappointed not to win them back, but fully focused on making sure we do everything we can to finish the series 2-2. In terms of my own captaincy, I know the direction I want to take this team in forward, and it's about starting that now and not after this series.
Very hungry. We've already spoken a lot about it. We came here to win the Ashes, not just to retain them. So, you know, we've spoken about it a lot as a group that last week's result was brilliant and we played very well, but all the guys are fully aware that this test match is bigger than that one. This is our grand final. We want this test just as much as any other test that we've played in this series.
Well, Peter Lawler, for the last time on your Ashes tour, at least on my program, welcome back to SEN.
Thanks, Jared. Is there a finish line, really? Gosh, it seems like we've been here for months, but they've been good months.
Have you got the wobbles?
I do. You've seen that video of those marathon runners whose legs have gone rubbery and who don't know what day it is? That's me. So I apologise for what I say after this. All right.
Now, the whole nation is wondering whether you've got your refund from your bank yet.
Well, I actually just got off the phone from my bank, so thank you for asking. It's one of my favourite topics. Well, the $101,000 beer is now a $2,000 beer. So I think technically it's probably still one of the more expensive beers ever purchased.
Yes.
But you never win with a bank, Jared. the charge went straight through. When I saw the charge had gone through, I said to the establishment, you need to put a refund through. There was a 19-minute gap between the refund, but somehow the banks have decided that that's a $2,200 gap. So all of your listeners would well know how hard it is to deal with banks on this topic. And my wife's tapping her fingernails on the table saying, you better fix this.
Yes, yes.
Yep. Anyway, so it's been a bit of fun. I cannot believe where the story's gone. The story's run in Indian newspapers, yep. In Dutch newspapers. The Dutch were offended because I didn't drink Heineken. and I've mentioned that in the story. It's run on CNN. It's been 24 hours on BBC. Somebody asked me if they could get a photo with me in a restaurant the other night. Waiter's eyes light up when I walk in a room.
Right.
Because I think there's that idiot who pays $100,000 for a beer. It might be our lucky night.
We've got a live one here.
Anyway, I never got famous for anything I've achieved. This is sort of Kardashian-level fame where you get it for no skill or achievement, just for, I don't know, burning money in public.
You do misadventures. It's your special category in Jeopardy, I reckon, on Cooper Tours.
Now you're sounding like my wife, Jared.
You're back in London?
Yes, we are. Right, we are. We've come back. So we were here for the second test. And where are we now? Fifth test. Players are happily ensconced at a very nice hotel near the Kensington Palace. I don't know which royal... Is that where Meghan and the other... I don't know the royal family very well. But they're their neighbours. I'm not allowed anywhere near that suburb. It's too expensive.
Yes.
It's a nice area just next to the big gardens there and not far from Buckingham Palace. And they've arrived in a pretty good mood, as you'd expect.
Just give us the overall feel. Is now that the Ashes are decided, has the air gone out of it a little bit in England?
100%. I mean, my best judge of... Hang on, there's an Uber driver going by me. My best judge of the England mood is the mood of their media.
Yep.
And they just have this vacant look. And it's quite understandable, too. It's been an extraordinary summer for the English. I mean, they've had the World Cup, and now they've had this. And this is just not the way you want to end a test series. Joe Root... It's kind of reverted to that Joe Root that was out in Australia last time. His voice has got quiet. He's trying to find some positives. But they know they've made an absolute mess of this, and they're writing, and if I was them, I would be writing the same stuff too. What happened? In what universe are the people that you picked for this series test cricketers?
Yeah.
I just don't get it. Roy, I mean, they finally bit the bullet and dropped Roy, but I think it was George Dobell who wrote on Crick Info the other day. These are people with really big reputations and very small averages.
Yeah.
And they've just got it wrong. The focus has been too much on one-day cricket in this country, and they've paid a price for it, and they've been humiliated. They've, you know, first time in 18 years, they haven't actually been able to grab the Ashes back in front of their fans, and retain them.
And on the Australian side of things, Pete, how not just the team, but whatever the slightly broader circle of Australians around this tour has been, how would you describe the joy, the accomplishment, the celebrations after Manchester on the way back to London?
Extraordinary. And I can't talk about this tour without going back to what happened in Headingley. And I think we spoke about this, Jared, that I saw the players in Southampton when they were preparing for this tour and thought, this group have got an incredible feeling among them. I saw them lose the unlosable test match at Headingley and possibly throw away a chance to create history. And the next day they fronted to breakfast at the little cafe that everybody goes to. In Leeds, and there was this vibe around that group that was same as the vibe that I saw in Southampton. It sounds like nonsense, but they didn't look like a beaten team. They looked like that team that arrived here and had a really sensible attitude to it. And it was all around what had been said in the rooms afterwards, an extraordinary leadership of Tim Payne, the accidental captain, and Justin Langer, and the planning that's gone into this, and Steve Waugh being around the group. So there's something that's gone on in this series. There's a book in it, to be honest with you. To bounce back from Headingley and win that next test match, the scale of that achievement is extraordinary. And the celebrations after it, well, they're trying to say they splashed around more beer than they drank. And I think that might be right. I did see them the next day. And there's only a couple of sore heads. But they're in a really good place. I'm a glass half full bloke. And I'm saying, look, it's okay to hang on to the Ashes, but you've got to win the series. You've got to make it 3-1. If they don't win here, I reckon there's a little bit of a pall over. You know, it just won't feel as good. But that's just my negativity, and I'm exhausted and all those things. But that's the message they're telling themselves to. And I'm always wrong, but I feel that this team will win 3-1 because they are such a good unit and they have rattled England.
And when Tim Payne spoke today, was that could you feel the resolve?
Yeah, I could feel the resolve. Yeah, I felt the resolve for a long time with Tim Payne. I hope I'm right, because you see a lot of teams sort of drop the ball in a dead rubber.
Yep.
And I hope they don't see it. You know, and that's the danger here, isn't it? But they've changed the team up a little bit. I think we should discuss that. They've dropped Travis Head and brought in Mitchell Marsh. Completely blindsided me. Didn't see it coming. Nearly fell off my chair in the press conference when they said it, and had to quickly change my copy in the newspaper. I reckon they'll probably bring Siddle back.
Yep.
I'm pretty sure that Siddle will play this test. The change is interesting because they want to preserve Cummins, and I think it's good too, because there's one other change that people haven't picked up, and it sounds extraordinary. Mitchell Marsh is right-handed, but somebody just told me some stats then. Like, Stuart Broad has really worried the Aussies and David Warner, but his average against left-handers is something like 14 in Ashes test,
yep.
And it's 62 against right-handers. So when you say Marsh is an all-rounder, he is in that he comes in as a bit of a batting option, and you're not going to lose much because Travis hadn't sort of done that well in this series. But he's also going to preserve, let them use Pat Cummins in short bursts. And I'm very happy that they've stuck with Pat Cummins, or that they will stick with Pat Cummins, because he deserves to play all five tests in this series. He's best bowler in the world, and he's been outstanding.
So the wisdom on the bowling front, I think, is irrefutable. I was really surprised that they dropped Head. I thought if they were going to make way for Marsh, they probably would have dropped Wade. It feels to me there's a lot invested in Head for what's to come. I was saying yesterday to Damien Fleming, my wish for the last test is that Head gets the score that will set him on his way. And the selectors have made good calls all the way through, so the second guessing is just second guessing. But I am a bit surprised for what's to come, and the hope for Travis Head that he is the one who's made way in the last test, where there was one more opportunity to you know, go over the top.
Yeah, you're right. And I wish you'd told me that you thought Mitch Marsh was coming in, because I would have flagged it in my copy. It's a good point. It's a really good point, because a lot of careers are saved and confidence restored by playing in this last test at the Oval. It's a test where people have made a lot of runs traditionally. There have been some great tests here. It's interesting. And after Travis was told, he probably spent 40 minutes walking laps with the coach, just discussing what was going on and why. I mean, it's a pretty big call on him, isn't it?
Mm.
And I suspect, knowing JL, that he was trying to tell him that this doesn't affect your career. Everybody gets dropped. You'll be right. But if Travis Head knows his history, it was Michael Slater that was dropped here in 2001 and a young Justin Langer came in and made a 100 that really kick-started his test career, wasn't it?
Yeah.
In fact, there have been a lot of 100s here over the years that have Steve Smith made his first 100 here, wasn't it, in 2013. We made another one here in 2015. And then there was Steve Waugh, who's also with the team. He made that one in... Do you remember the 100 he made in 2001? It's one of the great cricket photographs because he came back from a torn calf. He missed the fourth test. It seemed a bit dodgy that he'd come back. When he was out there, he tore the other calf. He was favouring the good one. And then he tore the one... He re-injured himself. He had two tears in his calf muscles, both legs, and he couldn't get a runner. But he made that 100 diving for the line. Classic Steve Waugh photo. Do you remember with the bat up, like a periscope?
Yes, yes.
Across the line?
Yep.
Yeah.
The periscope. Yes, yes, I do recall that photo now. Pete, what's the characteristic of the Oval?
Oh, well, it's London's Arden Street, isn't it? the gasometer out the back there. I think that's why Ricky Ponting gets a spring and he step around this ground. It's that structure. I just love seeing that old structure there. Maybe because I loved watching footy at Arden Street. It doesn't have a greyhound track around it like Arden Street used to have. And my grandfather was also the manager at the Gas and Fuel Works in Bendigo when I was a toddler. And I remember going down there when those things used to actually make gas and have tanks in them. They had a great smell. If you got bronchitis, they used to send you down to sit next to the burning fires. What was it? I suppose they burnt coke or coal, wasn't it, to make the gas?
Yeah, I guess so.
Yeah, there's something about the Oval and there's something about the fact that, you know, it's where tours end and... where great innings are played, the ones that we discussed before the break, all those hundreds. I also remember, kind of coming back to this team, that this was where they played that first one-day match under Tim Payne last year, and they were a rabble.
Yep.
They were a terrible side. They were heading for a 5-0 defeat. The selectors had got it wrong. Langer had come in. It wasn't his team. Tim Payne was trying to captain a one-day team, and it clearly wasn't his job. And I also remember in 2015, it was where Michael Clarke walked off the field for the last time. I have a photo on my phone of him, actually, with the old gasometer behind him.
Yep, yep. How far is it from Lords?
That's a good question. London geography is terrible. It's south of the river.
Yep.
It's next to a suburb called Kennington. You know, I'm going to relate all this back to me now, that I grew up in Kennington in Bendigo. In a car, it's probably an hour. If you got on the tube, it's probably about 15 minutes. London's so hard to drive around.
Yep.
But it's basically in the heart of London. Both those grounds are very close to the heart of London.
There aren't too many cricket cities in the world that have got two grounds that host test matches, are there?
No. I think a lot of the Indian grounds do because the IPL money, they've constructed new venues and the old ones don't get built.
Okay.
And Mumbai traditionally had, sorry, here comes that Uber Eats driver again. Mumbai had the CCI, the old Cricket Club of India, and because of some sort of dispute, they built another stadium right next door, almost, Wankhede Stadium. But no, there's very few. It's a bit like Melbourne, isn't it, having the two great footy stadiums.
Hmm. Do you need to grab that Uber?
No, it's not mine.
So this has been, each test match has been a story in its own right. And as you rightly point out, it'll stitch together to be a book. And I'm sure Gideon will write it and not give anyone else a look in. Are you hoping that the fifth test stays in that vein and has a compelling storyline that will deliver it to its full fruition?
Oh, absolutely. As I say to you, I really think this is an unfinished story and they need to finish this test series well. And all eyes are on Steve Smith and whether he can keep performing at the level he has. There's nothing that says he won't. It's been extraordinary to watch that guy bat in this series. The only thing anyone's really talking about is Steve Smith and just that frightening thing that he actually just looks like he's getting better all the time. But he is a master of the game. The game's no master of him. I want to see... I'm loving the Tim Payne story. I think there's a book in that. You know, from... This is a bloke... I mean, he said it the other day, and you need to remind yourself occasionally. 2 years ago, he was looking to get a job at Kookaburra.
Yeah.
He was going to play for the St Kilda Cricket Club, you know. And it's a little-known story, but it was Ricky Ponting that blew up and said, this is a disgrace. There's no way this bloke can leave state cricket. And he intervened, pulled some strings. Seven months later, he comes in. We all know the story. He wasn't even the wicketkeeper at Tasmania in his last Shield game. He was standing next to Matthew Wade. Out of the blue, he's the test captain. He comes over here. And it's something Steve Waugh said it to you, didn't he, yesterday morning? That was a great interview, by the way. That they have that feel of his team, that late 80s team that he brought over here, that are fashioning their own identity, that people didn't really rate. They're sort of players who are writing their own history. You know, there was no prediction about what they would be. But they've become so much more than what we expected of them.
So what do you think the future for Payne's leadership will be? I'm sure there was a view that the Ashes and probably the home summer and then sort of gently head off into the sunset. Could he captain for longer, do you think, now?
Yeah, I think he could. I kept hearing at the start of this series that he might even go to the Australian summer.
Yeah.
But I reckon that Cricket Australia wouldn't have allowed that.
Yes.
Wouldn't have accepted his resignation because where would that leave him? With Mitch Marsh as captain of Australia? I mean, Steve Smith can't do it. And there's a big question about whether he should do it. I think he'll keep going. I think that turnaround, I'll keep coming back to this. For him, he was critical to that turnaround from Headingley to Leeds to Manchester. It was him who came out of the showers. He looked at the boys. They were all like basically tears in their eyes, slumped shoulders, hanging around the room. And he said, I'm going out of the media now. You see, when I come back into this dressing room, I want it to be a happy place. That was just a test. It's one test. You play well, you lost. Lift your game, fellas. And he went down and he did the media. He did it in great spirit. He came back and he gave them another talk and he turned them around. So I'm loving this Tim Payne captain thing. I'm loving the accidental captain that he wasn't sent to leadership school Ricky Ponting, who was taught. Yeah, Ricky Ponting was taught how to eat with a knife and fork before they made him captain. And that's no exaggeration. Michael Clarke, they're all groomed. Their whole lives were about being the captain, you know, to a degree. Their whole lives were about being the captain of Australia. They aspire to it. He's the perfect complement to Jason Langer.
Yep.
They're opposites in so many ways. Payne's disorganised. He's forgetful. He's casual. He's all the things that Justin aren't. And it doesn't mean that the things that Justin is a negative, but what Tim brings to the team is really important. It just brings a sort of a balance, like a good meal. You know, it's the salt and the sugar.
Pete, it's been great to share it with you. You've done so very generously. We're all appreciative of that. We will hear you throughout the test match with Gary and Tim in breakfast, and I look forward to talking to you when you get home.
Great to chat, Joe. Take care.
Peter Lawler, who's achieved a level of fame Kardashian style. He does have a lovely way about him. More after Meredith with the news headlines.